All right, guys, welcome to Unapologetic. So have you ever heard of decolonizing your classroom?
Flourish the pinky.
Don't scare me like that, colonizer.
Apparently, this is some anti-racism rhetoric that a lot of teachers are implementing, and we're going to hear from a professor at UC San Diego who is decolonizing her classroom by giving every single student an A, regardless of their work. Let's get into it.
Young Apollo with the...
All right, guys, just when you thought the education system couldn't get any crazier, it does. I wish I had had this teacher in school giving me all A's for doing absolutely nothing, simply by a means of decolonizing the classroom. My black skin apparently makes me a victim, and therefore I deserve A's, which is a sentiment that is reverberating to so many other institutions, but especially the public schooling system. And today, I'm bringing on a guest to react to this professor from UC San Diego. Her name is Kali Fontanilla. She is a former public school teacher of 15 years and founder of the Exodus Institute, a K-12 online school. Kali Fontanilla, thank you for coming on the show.
So happy to be here. I actually sometimes share your videos and people are like, oh, you look so pretty today. I'm like, no, that's Amala.
I love it.
I do think we kind of look alike, so...
And but we all look the same, yeah, apparently.
She's the prettier version of me, so no. Go ahead.
No. You're gorgeous. Stop. Yeah, no, when you signed in, I'm like, oh, yeah, and we definitely look alike. I can see where people would get us confused, and often. Mm-hmm. Now, you stated you have not seen this video in particular, so we're going to show you and the audience and let you react to it. Let's get into this video from this professor.
What's up, y'all? Dr. Purity here, and I'm going to talk to you a bit about how to decolonize a classroom and how I decolonize my teaching. So first things first, we do not grade over here, okay? Anyone who takes my class automatically gets an A. They're told in the first week that they're going to get an A. The only thing that's required is attendance, and I have weeks of excused absences built in so that if people are sick or they have family obligations, it won't affect their grade. So since I'm not grading them, I'm just giving them A's. Like, how do I know that they're doing anything? And how do I know that they're learning anything? And so I also don't give homework. Surprise, surprise. And I run a discussion style classroom. So my students and I have equal part when it comes to bringing information to the table. We all sit together and share what we're talking about. And they get to use their critical thinking skills to apply the things they've learned in all their other classes.
And I'll let you unpack a lot of the terms that she went into because you're very familiar with this ideology. But first of all, all A's in the classroom, no homework, which I might be, you know, a little bit into. I understand keeping the classroom in the classroom, but discussion-based learning only, and the students are bringing the equal amount of information to what the teacher is bringing to the classroom. Some very interesting stuff placed in there, all in the name of decolonization. And Kali, can you explain what she means when she's saying she wants to decolonize the classroom?
First of all, when I watched it, I'm like, she's hella lazy. Mm-hmm. She's just lazy. You know how grading is like the hardest part of our job, for one. Yeah. Putting in grades, all of that. She's like, A's. All my students get A's. I don't have to do the work. So let's put that out there. That's just being lazy. Decolonizing the classroom. That's definitely a woke term that's happening, especially in California. I've heard it as a former public school teacher. And it brings in the whole equity policies where they lower standards for black and brown kids as if they can't meet the standards, or they'll get rid of like AP courses, which happened in my district, or they'll get rid of homework, which happened in San Diego, like the school district in San Diego during the pandemic. They actually got rid of homework because they noticed the black and brown kids weren't able to turn in the homework. And even when I was on the left, you were former left too. I can't stand the lowering of standards for black and brown people. Even then, I was like, we can meet the standards. My very first job was in Compton, teaching black and brown kids in Compton. And really what they needed was a teacher to hold them to the standards. And so when I hear rhetoric like that, it actually breaks my heart, because there's nothing wrong with standards. There's nothing wrong with making sure that our kids are capable and ready for the workforce. and all of this, let's give everyone A's garbage is so damaging.
Yeah, it's so insane because they'll bring up this point of decolonization or anti-colonialism, and they're associating things like doing well in school, things like having an objective reality or an objective truth that you adhere to, things like wanting to be a perfectionist or getting the right answer. These are considered colonial because these ideas were brought about during a time that Black people were oppressed. That's essentially what they're saying here. If Black people were oppressed during that time, nothing is valid that has come out of that time. And it just blows my mind because if we applied that logic to every other part of our lives, we would have nothing, we would be doing nothing, and we would be learning nothing. There is a time in a moment that we need to bring ourselves to where we separate the transgressions of our past from the positive things that have happened and go, yeah, that's bad, but this is good. And we're going to keep that around and we're going to keep our standards because that's what's going to save children in this case. And I'm sure you're seeing a lot of students hurt by this sort of rhetoric. And a lot of people will hear this and go, oh, well, what's wrong? It's just one college course. Let the students have a little lazy day here. How do you think this directly affects students and particularly students of color?
Well, again, not holding them to the standards when they're fully capable of doing that. I think that we, first of all, we're heading into a time of overcorrection where, yes, there has been some things in the past that are ugly in this country, as most countries, all countries have ugly things in the past. We are fallen human beings. But this idea where we need to overcorrect and hold the hands of our Black and brown kids and just create them, they're just become dependent. They're not able to do things on their own. When, like I said, I have been in the classroom for 15 years and they are fully capable of meeting the standards, if not breaking them. So I think it's actually racist on what they're doing. I think that she is racist, that teacher who's saying, I'm just giving all A's because of decolonization. And the other thing that that does is we've got to think about our white students as well. I have had, you know, students of all color in my classrooms. And if I'm telling my white students that they're getting A's because of the color of their skin, that delegitimizes their hard work as well. And so it's just a very distorted place we are in our educational system right now that needs to stop. And the final thing I want to say is that California actually treated Asian students real badly in the past. They used to have segregated schools for Chinese Americans here in the U.S. Yet, how well are they doing right now? They're actually breaking records and doing better than white kids. So they never like talking about Asian kids because, and in fact, they're trying to lump them in with the white kids now and calling them white, basically.
It's unbelievable. And we're seeing all these Supreme Court cases being brought up about affirmative action and how kids are being treated in schools. And it's not white kids bringing them up, although they do have similar complaints. It's Asian students saying, whoa, I'm a minority too. Whatever happened? You guys remember those Japanese internment camps that we went through, and now you're harming me in the process of trying to get into school? So you make a very good point there. A lot of people see this, they know that it's happening, they're seeing crazy professors like this espouse these views on the internet, and they're thinking, where did this all come from? And you are featured in our documentary that we just put out about really the biggest bully in school, and it's not some kid running around the halls, it's teachers' unions. And I want you to talk about that pipeline. How do these ideas come from teachers' unions and then sort of branch out into the education system?
Well, teachers' unions are a reflection of our nation's teachers, unfortunately. And our nation's teachers are being trained at these woke colleges. I mean, that's the best way to put it. Our colleges, we've let them become dominated by the left and all of these leftist philosophies and decolonization and critical race theory, which is very much in our college that's now in our high schools because these teachers have been trained on it. So the teachers' unions really are a reflection of our nation's teachers. But they also have a lot of power. There's not very much power in an individual teacher, but when they come together in a union and most of them are left-leaning, well, then here we have this and there's dues being paid to this union, tons of money, and that money is also going to Democrat policies and Democrat politicians. Then we have this giant bully that's in our schools that controls our teachers and that controls a lot of like what's going on in education today. So for example, Prop 16 in California, I don't know if you guys remember this, but in 2020, Prop 16, which was going to bring affirmative action on crack to California, because in the 90s, California actually voted to not allow for legal discrimination based on race, sex, gender. I was actually one of the official rebuttal statements in the ballot guide for Prop 16. And I was contacted by Asians because they were like, we can't have another Asian name as rebutting this because we will get, you know, discriminated against. We'll get, you know, oh, it's just Asians wanting to get in. But guess who was on the funding the other side? The yes for Prop 16, the teachers unions, the California Teachers Union. They wanted to bring in legal discrimination into all of our government agencies, including our public schools. So yes, they are, and they had the money to do it. They had that campaign was, I think our side raised around $2 million and that, and the yes side did 20 million, but we still beat them. And that's a big deal because it was grassroots. So there is hope, but they just have so much power. And like I said, they represent the teachers, which unfortunately I would say a majority of our nation's teachers are left-leaning because of the radical college education.
And it rocks my world that this is even something that's legal, that you could have a partisanship within a teachers union in a place that has so much power, an institution that has so much power. I am curious about your optimism on fighting something like a teachers union, because a lot of people will look at these unions, the NEA, for example, the second largest teachers union in this country with over, 14,000 different school districts across this nation. People will look at that and go, well, it's the teachers union. I don't know what I'm going to do about that. I have teachers come up to me and say, this stuff is being implemented in my classroom. And they're telling me I have to talk about this. And I don't want to go up against these major players in this. What does your optimism look like when it comes to fighting such a Goliath in this?
Well, I want to share with teachers out there that are like me, there are still some very good teachers out there that want to have politically neutral classrooms, which is what we should have in public schools. You don't have to join the union. I didn't do it for 15 years. And like I said, when I first started teaching, I was left leaning and I didn't do it because it was expensive. Mm-hmm. It was $150 a month.
Wow.
And you're just starting out as a teacher and that's a lot of money. So, and there's other alternatives that you can do to get protected if you are worried about, you know, professional liability and stuff like that. You can look into it. I actually joined the Christian Educators Association and they protected my, you know, if I ever got in trouble, which I never did. But so there are alternatives. You don't have to join the unions. But I also think that what happened in California with Prop 16, where we beat that legislation, which I'm surprised it didn't pass. I'm surprised that we beat it because they did it the year of all the Black Lives Matter stuff and people were so hyper race focused. Everyone wanted to do something to help Black people and they really marketed it as that, but we still beat them. And that was through education. And I think that that's something that we need to make sure we keep doing is pushing the truth out there and sharing what's wrong and poking holes in all of their myths and narratives that they're pushing on our nation's children. Because they, as someone who has taught, I started teaching my own generation, which is millennials, and now I'm teaching Gen Z. I've taught Gen Z and I'm still teaching Gen Z. Gen Z loves the truth. That's why there's so much censorship. I'm sure that's what happened with you. You found the truth and you were like, oh my gosh, my mind is blown. That's why they have to keep censoring things. So I think what we needed to do is just keep spreading the truth, keep helping organizations that are spreading the truth and sharing any way we can to counter these really powerful organizations so that, you know, like basically being like, individual activists against all of this by sharing truth, because really they are pushing lies, a lot of lies.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Into the most young, malleable minds of our time and in our country. You get into these truths in this documentary called The Biggest Bully in School that we've produced here at PragerU. I would love if you give a quick rundown of exactly what you go through in this documentary and what people can expect to find if they go and look it up.
Sure. For one, it's 20 minutes, and I think that's a great length.
Yeah, that's nice. For all of you who are busy.
It's not that long. Yeah. There's some other documentaries I've been in and they're like an hour and a half, and I'm like, oh, we're going to lose them after like 30 minutes. So it's 20 minutes. It does not take very much of your time. You can look it up and watch it. It's great. It's really well done. I'm PragerU. Just working with PragerU was awesome, and I love every time I get to work with you guys. But it really is just exposing, I think, there's going to be at least one thing in that documentary that people are going to be surprised by. They didn't know what was happening. What has happened is America has had the wool pulled over their eyes with our nation's schools. We did it ourselves because we remember going to public school and we were young, especially people that are over you know, the age of 20, basically, because it's even changed since you. And we're like, oh, we remember. It was okay. It wasn't that bad. Yeah, there was some, you know, I had some bad experiences or whatever, and it wasn't like this big political environment. Yeah. And now it's completely different. And so I think that when people watch this documentary, they're going to be like, oh, I had no idea that was going on. I didn't know that teachers can't be fired even if they've done something really awful to our nation's children. I didn't know that a parent who wanted to just see the lessons being taught to her five-year-old is getting sued by the teachers union just to see the lessons. Mm. So I think that now that we're finally standing up, they're starting to get really scared. And like I said, education is the way, showing the truth, seeing this documentary, it's going to wake people up. And we're going to start going, oh, this isn't right. And what happens is they dig their heels in, but it exposes them even more, which I think is what needs.
Right. We need to pull them out in plain sight for everybody to see. And they either have to defend what they're doing or explain exactly why it's wrong and why they're doing it.
Or deny.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or deny.
Like the NEA. The NEA denied that there was critical race theory in our schools. And I literally have lessons that say critical race theory that was given to my ninth grade students in a ninth grade in a required class, ethnic studies, which is in California. They're requiring ethnic studies to graduate. I had like the screen. I'm like showing it like, hey, this is while the news and the NEA is saying it's not in our schools. Here I am, a teacher in our school saying, look, here's the lessons these kids require to take this class. It was basically critical race theory from start to finish, but they were also taught it explicitly. And then on top of that, the NEA now says, oh, we're going to protect teachers that teach critical race theory. So they're saying, oh, it's not in our schools, but then we're also going to protect the teachers that are teaching it. Okay.
Right.
So they just play games with us. And we just, like I said, just need to stay on top of it. And expose all of it.
And they think we're stupid and we're not. And they think they can do this stuff right in front of our faces and not be called out for it. It is so true. And they think that we're not willing to educate ourselves on the issues that we are facing. And, you know, in some ways they can be right. I think apathy is a big problem when it comes to education, and parents aren't taking the time a lot of the times to look into what their kids are actually being fed in school. Marissa would call that junk food, our CEO here. Now, Kylie, I know a lot of people are going to want to keep up with you outside of this documentary and what you're doing. Where can people support you?
Sure. I actually started an online K-12 school. I should still be in my classroom enjoying getting ready for Christmas break. But because of everything that's happened this last 2 years, I mean, I had a 10-year job. I loved what I was doing, but everything has, I mean, I hate to say it, but like crap hit the fan in the nice way to say. I mean, our educational system was really exposed this last 2 years, especially in blue states or, you know, left-leaning states. And like, I decided, you know what, God's been putting it on my heart to open a school. So I decided to open a K-12 online school that's nationally accredited for parents that want to pull their kids from public school. But what we have that's unique from any other program in the U.S., is that we have lessons that counter leftist narratives for 5th through 12th grade students. So we have that for college, Hillsdale College. They actually do a lot of lessons that counter that. PragerU does that. But our school is actually takes some of your Prager videos and adds lessons to them and makes it into like a full on, hey, this is a credentialed teacher. I'm credentialed. I teach the lessons. And I believe not only do kids need to be protected from these divisive narratives, but they also need to learn how to counter them, because the left is radicalizing their children right now and they are our future. So we need to make sure our kids, when they grow up, can fight these like wannabe communists and all the things they're trying to bring into our country, and hopefully educate them as well.
Right.
Because peer to peer is so important. And if we have kids that are strong in the truth, they might be able to influence the kids that have been brainwashed, especially as they get older. So that's really what's important about our program is also making sure that that kids can, you know, defend why capitalism is a better system than communism. Yeah. And they know the true history of America's founding and stuff like that. And our enrichment program is actually only $20 a month. So we have our full program, and then we have enrichment for $20 a month, which I want parents in America to be able to
absolutely
afford.
In the face of all this, it's really important to have great alternatives and people who are doing the work, because we can point out problems all day long, but if nothing is being done to solve them, we are in a really, really bad space to be in. So, I mean, I commend you for stepping out of a space that you were familiar with and comfortable with and tenured in and doing something that needed to be done. I can't tell you how much that is appreciated, and I'm sure a lot of parents are going to be watching this right now, or future parents, and are going to be so happy to know that this is an option for them. And thank you so much for coming on and talking about what's happening, why it is happening, and doing so in our documentary, The Biggest Bully in School, Kali. I just want to thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And if parents want to learn about my school, they can just go to thinkexodus.org. And just, you know, stay strong, stay paying attention, and, you know, we're in God's hands, so we'll be okay. But there's a lot of crazy stuff right now. And I don't know how many times we need to tell you how bad these schools are, but the documentary exposes that again.
We'll scream it until our lips turn blue, I think.
Yes, exactly. That's what I feel like I've been doing the last 2 years.
We'll keep doing it. Thank you so much for being on. Yeah. I'm so happy to have met you and my twin, apparently.
Yes, my sister.